Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Every week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between your personal health and our total health environment. That means the health of our communities, the health of our food, water, air, and earth, the health of our healthcare system, the health of our society, and the health of our ecology right here on planet Earth. Every week on Connect the Dots, we connect all of those things that have tremendous influence upon and your health, your family's health, and all our well-being. I'm a longstanding journalist of health, food, and the environment, specializing in the integrative health movement for about 20 years. And I cover all different kinds of things. You can follow my blogs on Alternet, EcoWatch, and the Huffington Post, as well as follow me on Facebook and my website, healthjournalistblog.com. Every week on Connect the Dots, we talk to different experts, authors, thought leaders, doctors, scientists, activists, organizers, about all of the different things that are happening now or coming that may be impacting our health in significant ways. And today we're actually going to look in depth at our personal health options and the healthcare system itself, and how that serves as a context for how we seek health and how we can better seek health. And my guest today is someone who's been on the show before. He's absolutely terrific, and you're really going to love hearing from him. His name is James Maskell. He's the founder and CEO of Evolutionary Medicine and the host of the Functional Forum, which features different doctors and practitioners. The practice of form, probably the preeminent form of integrative medicine called functional medicine. Mark Hyman, David Perlmutter, and many other doctors that you've heard of come out of that practice model, and James has just been hosting that and kind of creating a community around this cutting-edge and new wave of healthcare practice. And that's what he's going to be talking with us about today, among other things. You know, one of the things that I hear a lot about covering all these topics is that there are things that we can do for our health. We can eat healthy. We can, you know, deal with our stress. We can do various things. But the problem is that our healthcare system isn't really focused that way. It's not really directed that way. So all of those positive messages are kind of, let's do it to one side. Let's avoid our current healthcare system. You know, let's just try to, you know, do everything possible so we don't wind up in their care because, you know, we're in trouble if we do. You know, sometimes it's great and we need that kind of healthcare, you know, in certain emergencies and crisis intervention if, you know, we get into a car accident, but at other times, the goal of health seeking is really to avoid getting involved in the healthcare system. So, you know, the question that I think many of us have had about that is, why can't there be, you know, a way that the healthcare system can better serve the goals of well-being that so many of the listeners to both this program and this station, Progressive Radio Network, are attuned to. And surprisingly, James Maskell, our guest today, has some really groundbreaking new answers in that regard. So welcome to Connect the Dots, James Maskell.
Thanks, Allison. Great to be here with you. Always a pleasure.
You know, James, one of the, you know, over the 25 years that I've covered the integrative health movement, the message has kind of been do that for your health, because we have to avoid this healthcare system. It's a huge grinding bureaucracy. It's like a ship that's too big to turn. We can't change it, so we sort of have to do everything to stay out of their clutches by being as healthy as possible. But your message is different. You're telling us that not only can we change the healthcare system, but we must do it.
Yeah, not only that, but we're building, you know, that new system that I think everyone wants. Yeah, absolutely. You know, the name, the evolution of medicine, which is the name of the business, you know, what we see is that healthcare is, you know, if you think about evolution, you think adapting to our environment, you know, things adapting to their environment. And the truth is that, you know, we have a very different environment of health today than when the medical system, than when it was started. 100 years ago, when Abraham Flexner wrote his report and we really shifted into modern medicine, you know, the biggest issues of the day were acute infections. We had, you know, trauma and those kind of issues, you know, and communicable disease. Those were the big issues. Now, the medicine that we have right in front of us is very different. You know, we have non-communicable diseases. We have lifestyle diseases. We have an epidemic of chronic and autoimmune diseases. And so, you know, last year in our Evolution of Medicine Summit and, you know, throughout our work, we've been sort of speaking to those people who are on the cutting edge of this medical evolution. But, you know, last year we did that and it was a great success and we got a lot of people on, and, you know, the Functional Forum has now become the biggest integrated medicine conference for doctors, and we have 150 meetup groups around the world from San Francisco to Manila, you know, in the Philippines, watching our content, and we've been building community. But, you know, as this year's gone on, what I started to realize, Allison, was that, you know, adapting to our environment and evolution is a very slow process. And it's particularly slow in medicine because a lot of what we need a medical system to do to help us deal with chronic disease is not just a little bit different from acute disease, it's actually completely opposite. And so, you know, we could go into some of those opposites that I see, but essentially what we're doing with our next summit, Evolution of Medicine Summit number 2, 21st to 28th of September 2015, is we're going to talk about healthcare from scratch, because what I suppose and what I've come to see in the last year is that, you know, where we have been and where we need to go are so polarized opposite in so many ways that just expecting and waiting for one to evolve into the other is not a strategy, and it's going to be way too costly and it's going to be extremely inefficient. And so what I'm proposing is that we actually build healthcare from scratch with all of the things that need to be there for it to be effective. So that's the basic idea. And I think once we get into it, some of your listeners and readers, all of the frustrations that you're talking about with the medical system are really a focus of the fact that, you know, it hasn't been able to evolve across so quickly because they have been polar opposites. And so, you know, we want to build something that really fits with the diseases of the day and that has the adaptability to adapt as new issues come along.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, if everyone could just kind of put on their, you know, dream future glasses or something and say, you know, what would a healthcare system look like if it really met our needs and not was just, you know, well, we'll tell you this is the way we do it and this is what science says, but what if a healthcare system really met our needs? The thing is, people don't do that revisioning very often because they feel like, well, what can I do? It's much too big. It's much too entrenched. It's out there. What you're talking about with healthcare from scratch is really building a new model from the ground up in a kind of segment-by-segment way, in a way that actually might be more doable, that you're saying is more doable than our imagining. We have to kind of convert everyone in the old system or sort of tinker with it in some kind of way, or hope they come around, or, you know, kind of show them. So you're saying we can actually, and this is very much in keeping with a lot of future systems evolutionary work that's occurring on many different fronts, where it's kind of like, let's build a new system. And so you're saying, let's build healthcare from scratch, and it is doable. How is it doable? I think that I think listeners to this show are going to be ones who kind of, we can talk more about what some of the flaws of the current system are and what needs to change. But I'd like to just kind of snapshot a little bit forward so people can really actually possible, and this is the work you have been doing. So could you describe that to our listeners, please?
Well, yeah, I can. I mean, I could definitely talk about the structures that, you know, that we've been building. But, I mean, I would just, I guess what I'd like to do also is just is share, you know, some of these opposites that, you know, I see as polar opposites that we can't evolve one to the other. Yeah, so the most obvious example of this is, you know, we have a fundamentally reactive healthcare system. So, you know, all of the system has been built around some event happening. You know, and that made total sense when we had infections or accidents, because there was an event, there was an infection, there was an event, and it made sense to, you know, create billing codes and, you know, doctors and emergency rooms and, you know, the structure that was necessary to do that. Now, what we need to solve these modern diseases is a proactive medical system. That proactive and reactive are opposites. And so, you know, how do you retool a system that's all designed on an event happening, you know, to that? So you can see examples like diabetes. Like, you're not diabetic until suddenly your number on a certain test goes above a certain number, and now you're diabetic, and now there's an appropriate response. Whereas obviously, you know, diabetes is a perfect example that there's a lot of, you know, there's pre-diabetes, there's inflammation happening way, you know, earlier. Alzheimer's is another great example. You know, we now know that Alzheimer's, the sort of structure that delivers Alzheimer's, or that the cause is starting 30 years before you ever see a symptom. So if you're starting with that, you know, good luck in trying to, you know, trying to stop Alzheimer's once you already have a symptom, because it's been going for 30 years. So that's one example of eight that I've come up with, where we have a completely opposite system, and waiting for one to evolve into the other is just not practical.
What are the other ones that you've identified, James?
So, you know, I'll run through them because I think some of them are obvious. You know, right now you have a gastroenterologist, you have an endocrinologist, you have a rheumatologist, and you have specialties in certain areas of the body. The body's been separated by geography, which to me, again, you know, in functional medicine, a lot more of the understanding when you have multi-systemic illness, where you have, you know, all kinds of systems interacting with each other, and our new understanding, the new science showing, you know, like the gut-brain connection, you know, different parts of the body intricately connected with each other, which is completely obvious to anyone who would look at the body that they are interconnected. You need someone who understands the interconnection between systems, and just knowing one of these systems is not good enough. And it's not going to work. You know, we need a patient-centered system. We need it where the patient is the center of the whole process. And now we have a doctor-based system. You know, we have a doctor and disease-based system. The doctor's the hero. There are certain, you know, codes for every disease. But what we really need is a patient-centric approach, because the patient has to participate in their health if they want to avoid type 2 diabetes or obesity or autoimmune disease. There's an element for a role for the patient to play. And so, you know, there's another example. You know, a really classic example actually is germs. You know, we've spoken about this before, Alison, but, you know, in the old system, we wanted as few germs as possible. We wanted to kill as many germs as possible, and that's why we have gobs of hand sanitizers and antibiotics, just using, you know, as much as possible, and there was no downside. Well, now we see the downside is that we actually need, you know, the new research shows that we need as many of these germs and as big a diversity as possible, because they help us with the digestion, immunity, and metabolism. So again, we've trained every patient and every doctor antibiotics, you know, if in doubt, antibiotics. Strep infection, antibiotics. Sinus infection with no science that it's good, antibiotics. Viral infection, you know, no chance of that mechanism working. Viral infection, do antibiotics anyway. You know, that's insane in those last two examples. And we trained everyone to kill the germs, and the germs are responsible. And now there's this, you know, flip, and we need as many germs as possible. When you stop killing them, how do you retool a whole system across? You know, it takes 17 years for new science to be actually adopted into everyday practice. We don't have 17 years. You know, we don't have 17 years to get this right. The number of kids on the autism spectrum, the number of people with chronic diseases, if we wait 17 years until we see any change on this, everyone in the country is going to be chronically ill, and no one's going to be able to be there to pay for it. So that's why, you know, that's another one of the examples. And a couple of others, you know, we've moved from food as fuel. That's why there's McDonald's and Burger King's and whatever in hospitals, right? So that there's no way that medicine can think that food has any impact on medicine, because otherwise they wouldn't put fast food in a hospital. But now we know food is medicine, a very strong and potent form of it over your lifetime. Technology, you know, we've gone to a point where in the past you would only get your blood pressure measured once a year, if that, when you're in a sort of a pressurized environment in a hospital. And so, you know, now there's an opportunity to have your heart rate and your blood pressure measured at all times via a smartwatch. So again, you know, high touch, high tech. There's never been a focus on anything apart from the individual. You know, in medicine up until now, we segregated people out. Okay, you see a doctor, you should be embarrassed and ashamed of all of your health things, so let's not, you know, talk to anyone about your health issues apart from your doctor. And when you're speaking to your doctor, there's, you know, complete privacy, so you're sitting across from them one-on-one. But now we know that health is actually created by communities. You know, how do you create health? You have, you know, the healthiest places in the world don't have a lot of medicine. The places in the world where people live to 100 consistently and don't have chronic disease in the numbers that we have it, they don't have a lot of medicine, but they have a lot of community. So we need to find ways to bring community in. And community, again, it's opposite from individual. It's the opposite idea. And then the last, and maybe the like sort of most controversial, and I just throw this in because I think this is just a sort of a glaring thing, is what about the placebo effect? You know, we've got this situation right now where the placebo effect is seen as this trick that the body plays, and you know, you're being tricked, and if you're taking a placebo, then you're being tricked, and it's all a big trick. The placebo effect is our best form of healthcare. It is the body producing what it needs to completely cure a disease, to, you know, full remission, you know, and getting it going. And it happens in 18 to 80% of cases, and we know that because every trial has a placebo control. So rather than thinking about how can we beat the placebo effect, and isn't this placebo effect annoying because it's messing up our drug trial, you know, let's think about how do we maximize it? How do we stimulate every single person out there to understand that they know how to, you know, stimulate their own inner placebo, and they know how to do it consistently, and they do it consistently, and that's their first line of defense. So, you know, thinking about the placebo differently is another part. So those are the eight ways that I just saw, look, we have an opposite situation here. And if we want a medical system that's proactive and holistic and patient-centered and microbiome-maximized and placebo-maximized and food as medicine and high-tech, we need to build that and not expect to wait for this whole thing to shift over when there are eight areas where there's, you know, a complete opposite.
What would be the effect of making a change in these eight areas? I mean, what would happen if we did that? How would medicine evolve if we did that?
Well, it's a revolution, obviously, you know, to do it very differently. But the other thing that's really important about this is that the structures and systems that are needed for this type of system are potentially a lot less costly, right? You know, you don't need, if you're taking advantage of community and peer-to-peer support, you don't need any more doctor treatment hours. You know, we have a fixed limit of number of doctor treatment hours, but we have an unlimited amount of community, and it's free to deliver to anyone. You know, with technology and education, you know, we could educate everyone in the world at exactly the same time at zero cost on all of these things with the internet and those kind of things too. So, you know, what you start to see is that a lot of the systems that are required for this actually could be a lot less expensive, a lot easier to develop if we weren't, you know, we've got tens of thousands of health coaches that are so passionate about helping people to, you know, deliver behavior change. Why do we think that it's the best idea that doctors need to learn about nutrition? They don't need to learn. They're going to take, you know, they don't think they need to learn. They didn't get it in medical school. Some of them, you know, should learn, but we've got all of these professionals that know a ton about nutrition. They just need to work together. And so, you know, these are the areas where I feel like there's a lot of synergy. And if we could just get everyone sitting on the right seats on the bus and, you know, scale the whole thing with technology, we could build a system that's a lot more cost-effective, has, you know, nowhere close to the same overhead as we see now with the buildings and the administrators and all of the crap that goes into healthcare that we're paying for, that doesn't actually deliver any more health, those are the things that need to go, and these are the things that need to stay.
Mm-hmm. So are you looking at things like community-centered clinics and, you know, people in different areas of the country learning more about the health care that works and being able to more easily and economically access it? I mean, is that part of the whole long-term vision that, you know, people could look forward to helping and participating and building out?
Yeah, no, 100%. So that's, you know, that's the long-term goal. But what do we want to build this around, right? Medicine mm-hmm. is built around primary care, right? That's your primary care doctor. It's your first port of call into the medical system, and they decide whether you go and see a specialist or you get a drug or whatever. They're the control point. Now, unfortunately, primary care is really serving no value at this point. One, because you know, because they don't actually do anything, like they don't empower you. You only see them for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. You know, there's not a lot of ability for value to be delivered there. And secondly, because, you know, not a lot of people know this, but hospitals have been buying up all these primary care practices because that's their source of leads. And so when you go to a physician-owned, when you go to a primary care clinic that's owned by a hospital, if you get a referral into the system, you don't really know whether you actually need to go and see that person or this primary care doctor is just trying to meet, you know, one of the contract requirements in his area where he has to, he has a certain quota of people that need to see the rheumatologist every month. And unless he see, you know, unless he hits that number, he's going to get fired or he's not going to get his bonus. So, you know, those sort of things are absolutely abhorrent. And so, you know, for, I think a lot of people are losing faith in primary care. That's why they're going directly to specialists, booking on ZocDoc, going directly to specialists and cutting out the middleman, as it were. But what I feel is the most important and what we can build all of these communities around is this network of functional providers. So that's what we've been building for the last 2 years. That's what the Functional Forum is. It's a show for doctors to help them to see the value in essentially creating their own functional practice. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's what we've been focusing on, because if you can get a functional doctor in a community, you can build the community structures around that, something like a group visit, which is a clinical structure for accessing the power of community, but you can do community events, you can have the farmers market right there, you can have lectures, you can have community get-togethers, you can, you know, you can stimulate peer-to-peer support and accountability structures through that thing. So we've been building these, but the other reason why we've been focusing on that is that functional medicine is coming, right? It's coming to a hospital near you, and it's coming to a place near you. The only thing is, how long is it going to take to do that? And with all of these bigger organizations, it takes more time. And so, you know, one of the reasons why we believe that a network of functional micro practices, as it were, is the best solution, because though, if you are a doctor and you switch to doing that, you can start practicing that medicine today. You don't have to wait 5 years until there's an integrated medicine center at your hospital. You can start today. So the independent nature of these practices really helps to accelerate the evolution of medicine, because doctors can practice the type of medicine they want to today and not just be lobbying the hospital for the next 5 years to have an integrated medicine center that then they get to do it. And then there's a ton of bureaucracy anyway. So, you know, that's why we're really focused on doctors delivering this in private practice. And, you know, that's one of the things that we see as sort of the underpinnings of this process.
So you're saying, I mean, they're the first phase of integrative medicine was kind of like the founding of all of these different integrative departments or centers within academic medical institutions, and that kind of gave a certain credibility, you know, where people could go, oh, it's not some weird fringy thing. Many of these people practicing are in fact doctors. It has research backing. It's evidence based. I can trust in it. And so that was a virtue. But you're saying that actually there are limitations in terms of founding it within an academic institution and going, you know, doing it in that halfway house kind of way is too sort of top-heavy or too limited as a model, you know, has worked to some extent.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, if it needs to adapt quickly. It won't do it in those sort of institutions. And, you know, just ask an acupuncturist who's doing acupuncture inside a major setting. They don't have the freedom to put the needles where they think they should be. They have to do a very specific, you know, needle acupuncture protocol that maybe, you know, has just been decided on high by, you know, by some organizer that, oh, this is a quick way to do it, but it negates a lot of the value of the service. And so that's, you know, just an example that I like to give. Or nutrition. Oh, yeah, we're going to do nutrition at the hospital and everyone's going to get, you know, low-fat this and low-fat that because they're still behind on, you know, understanding the new science of what's coming on. So, you know, those are, you know, like look at the dietitian profession. You know, suddenly people realize that, you know, maybe 20 years ago that what you eat can affect health. So now you've got this whole group of professionals, dietitians coming into the world. But now look, what are dietitians 20 years later? You know, they have conferences sponsored by Coca-Cola and they think that a small can of Coke is a part of a healthy diet. And, you know, you look at the sponsors, so it's completely corrupted. And so, you know, do you want that in the system or do you want, you know, a system built on integrity and trust and, you know, those people that have been actually doing doing this right. And I think we want it based on those people who have had the integrity and the wherewithal to be able to, you know, see that medicine wasn't working and have gone out to look for the right solutions. You know, I've found in my work that, you know, the vast majority of providers, doctors and other providers that have made the switch into integrated medicine, you know, are some of the most integrity-driven people that I've ever had the chance to meet. And I think we should be building a system on them rather than, you know, trying to appease the current control patterns. I mean, this is very Buckminster Fuller. We don't want to fight the existing reality. We want to build a new system that makes the existing system obsolete. And that's what has been sort of driving my intention for the last 5 years.
That sounds terrific. It sounds like a dream come true. And you're actually saying, you know, one of the sort of truisms has been, it's been a problem in food choice, for example. You know, there's been this saying, well, if you vote with your dollars and, you know, you buy at the farmer's market, we're going to build up these healthy food systems. But meanwhile, then, you still have the institutionalized agriculture that's trying to impose GMOs on people. It's, trying to wipe out, you know, create regulations and laws and things that make it harder for family farmers and others to grow. So actually, there's a really, so putting your money where your mouth is an important thing to do. But what you're saying is that we can do even more. That it's not just a matter, you know, part of it is what is your health care provider? How will your health care dollars be spent? Are you going to, for example, if something has made its way into the system and is covered by insurance, there's less out-of-pocket cost for you, but it actually may be the wrong treatment. It may have detrimental side effects. It may, be problematic or harm you in some way. So because of the institution, what has been institutionalized isn't the right solution. So that it's reimbursed or that it's this or that, you know, it's that, that doesn't mean that it's actually the right healthcare approach. So you're really kind of trying to forge a pathway where people can kind of take back their power, take their economic power, and, you know, and take their participatory power and support one another, because it's not just you go see the doctor, it's also as a community people support each other. I mean, that sounds like what you're sketching out as what the path forward would look like. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yep. No, I mean, that's exactly where we're going with this, Alison. So, yeah, look, the power of dollars is working. It is evolving things. I mean, you know, when I moved to America 10 years ago, I lived in Georgia for a while. There was no organic section in the supermarket. And now in the same supermarket 10 years later, it's massive. And it's grown over time because people demand that. And that's happened to a certain degree in healthcare, is that, you know, there are, you know, maybe 20,000, 30,000 functional doctors, but if you add in all the doctors that are, you know, practicing nutrition or otherwise, it probably takes it more like 50,000. So, like, you know, that's happening as a response. You know, people are looking for this care, they see that it works, the word of mouth develops, and it happens. So, you know, that is happening. but it's not been really available. One of the biggest downfalls of functional integrative medicine is, one, there's not enough doctors to cover everyone. The demand and supply has sort of been okay at this point, you know, maybe more demand than supply, and that's why the prices have been so high. So again, it hasn't really been affordable for people. And so those are some of the big things that we're looking to, you know, to solve. And that's the difference between me sort of preaching about it and actually delivering the systems that could actually change that. So yeah, I mean, part of it is finding systems to take advantage of peer-to-peer support and deliver that. But some of it is more sort of systemic in nature, where, you know, we actually have to have a health insurance program that would, you know, would honor this, or we have to have some sort of way of that happening. So those are some of the directions that we are going to be able to deliver this, and also, you know, to be able to track outcomes. Like, every practitioner that's doing integrative and functional medicine knows this, and every patient that's had a good experience with integrative and functional medicine knows this, that the outcomes for those kind of providers are better than average. And, you know, much better in terms of certain diseases. However, how do we know? How can we prove that? There's been no way of proving that up until now. So we also have to work out ways to be able to track these outcomes, so that we can go with our big data under our belt, be able to say, hey, this is actually happening. And you can see from these results that if someone comes in with type 2 diabetes, you know, the regular goal is to just get them on insulin and manage their issue for this long. But on this end, you know, if you go with a functional medicine approach, 45% of people reverse their diabetes within 4 weeks. By 12 weeks, it's 75%, and the other 25% are now, you know, are still managing it with insulin. So then you can see, okay, well, we've had a complete cessation of symptoms in these cases, and it's just becoming more and more obvious because this is happening, and it's about to happen in a really exciting way on British TV. One of my friends is a functional doctor and has his own TV show, and that's launching in September. And in the first episode, he reverses someone's diabetes in 4 weeks. People don't talk about reversing diabetes. It's not a thing that can happen, but it's going to happen in September, and it's going to be seen by 10 million people in the UK. So, you know, it's going to be a big wake-up call for a lot of people, and I'm excited to see, you know, that as an example of the ripple effects that are already happening.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, you know, basically the standard medical view is, once you've had it, you've got it, and you're on, you know, in this case it's insulin, for other drugs, you know, either preventing it or treating it, heart disease, all of the heart drugs, you know, you're basically, you know, the solution is a medication, and you're on the drug forever. So, you know, the idea that actually you could change diet or do other strategies, nutritional supplements, and actually turn around something that would be a lifelong sentence in 4 weeks is completely amazing. Where do you see the public as being in this? Is, you know, what percentage of people, I mean, do you have any handle or idea on what percentage of people are ready for this kind of change? You know, how many people are kind of ignorant of it, and, you know, sort of, you know, like, how many people that are really interested in this will it take to kind of help turn the system to have a significant effect, and then make it more viable economically for others who maybe can't access it now?
Yeah, great question. I don't have the exact numbers, but I will tell you, here's a few things. So, you know, I would say we're probably talking about less than 1% of people who use functional medicine as their main form of medicine. I would say it's small. However, you know, if you add up these other numbers, you'll see that, you know, we are actually fighting a good fighting chance. So 50% of Americans use some form of alternative medicine, supplements, chiropractic, massage, you know, any of these other things that are using. So 50% of people do it. So that's a good number. You know, then we've got the percentage of people that actually are interested in food as medicine, or have gone gluten-free, or do paleo, or go CrossFit, you know, do CrossFit. All of those people are a fit, because if you do paleo or you're a CrossFitter, you know, you understand food as inflammation and food as medicine and you know, the inflammatory effects of eating processed food. So you, how long do you think those people are going to stand by and wait, especially when they have an issue come up, are going to tolerate a doctor that, you know, that doesn't know anything about that, and they know more about it than them? They're not going to tolerate that. And yet we're seeing this huge shift. I don't know if you've heard of Eric Topol's new book, but it's called The Patient Will See You Now. And it's a perfect example of this, you know, big shift to a point where the doctors aren't in charge. You know, the doctors, you know, the doctor, you know, is going to fire me because I'm, you know, my kid's not vaccinated on schedule. You know, that doctor works for me. This is the wrong way around. I'm firing you because you're not open-minded to, you know, these kind of concepts. So we're seeing a massive transfer of power from the doctor to the patient, and I'm excited to see that happen, because ultimately then medicine will reward those people that actually add value. You know, consumers are used to consuming in every other industry. They're used to, you know, looking for value. They've just been so cost blind because of insurance, you know, that they, you know, that they don't know what things are costing, but they don't know what value they're getting. And so, you know, their choices have been different. But now with more and more cost and the individual becoming a greater and greater payer of their own health care, I think you'll start to see that payers know how to, you know, ascertain value. And if they're not getting value from the system and they're having to pay co-pays and drug co-pays and out-of-network costs and all of that other stuff, you know, they're going to realize they're not getting much value from that system and come across. And so what we need to have is a system that once they decide to come across, you know, can get them into our system. And that's been the missing link, basically. I mean, we've been working with these functional doctors for a long time, and they've all been working on cash, and a lot of them have built very successful practices working on cash as people become more savvy consumers. But now what we're going to launch at this Evolution of Medicine Summit, and why I wanted to come on to talk to your listeners, is we're actually going to be launching a program that will bring down your healthcare costs. So, you know, the cost of this quasi, it's not insurance, it's actually a health sharing service. But essentially, you know, you'll be able to join this healthcare sharing service. You'll be able to, you know, bill your, you know, integrated medicine services or percentage of those to the service. It's much cheaper than regular insurance. And, you know, we built, the team that's behind it has really built out other supportive services to the insurance part of it, or the quasi-insurance part of it, to, you know, to take advantage of peer-to-peer support, to take advantage of education at scale, to take advantage of technology and all these kind of things. So that's what we're going to be announcing at the summit, and part of the reason of the summit is to get a lot of people together to launch this this new service.
Now, that sounds really amazing, like the missing link. Let's talk a little bit more about the summit, because there has been a, occasionally your voice drops out a little bit. I don't know if it's my phone or if it's happening on, you know, as to our listeners are hearing it too. But I know that when we initially mentioned the summit, you know, that happened. So let's go back in and just tell people from scratch about, you know, what the coming summit is, when it's happening, what it's about, how they can participate.
Yeah, so the summit is Evolution of Medicine Summit is September 21 to 28. It's free. The site will go live middle of August, so that's when you'll be able to see the whole lineup of speakers and who's speaking. But, you know, block off time the week of the 21st of September to listen. It's free if you listen to it live, so, you know, every day if you sign up, we'll send you a bunch of talks to listen to, you know, to warm you up as soon as you register between the end of August and September 21st. And then during that week, we'll have five talks per day, Monday to Friday, for you know, health consumers. That will, you know, half of the time will be spent on, you know, really delivering value. We've chosen speakers at this year's summit who not only have an amazing record of working with people clinically, but have also used technology to scale their impact and have impacted, you know, in some cases, millions of people, tens of thousands of people. And so, you know, so what we do is in the first half of each interview, they'll be sharing whatever their best strategies are for keeping healthy. So, you know, we have one day that's dedicated to the major killers: diabetes, heart disease, cancer, autoimmune disease, and mental disorders. You know, we've got leaders in the field who very quickly can tell you how to prevent and how to work in a holistic fashion with those issues. You know, we've got a whole day dedicated to the gut and the microbiome, because that's such a key area. We've got a whole day dedicated to the evolution of nutrition, looking at evolutionary concepts within nutrition. You know, things like last year we had a whole day dedicated to paleo, but you're seeing even paleo is starting to adapt now with, you know, Mark Hyman coming out with vegan, you know, vegan and paleo mixed. You know, basically only 9% of Americans eat vegetables. So I think he realizes that the real goal here is to get more people to eat vegetables. And if you are talking about a diet that headline is eat more fat and meat, which is not really what paleo is about, but that's sort of the way that the media's cotton onto it, you've ended up at a point where you haven't really moved the needle. And the most important thing, which is if only 9% of people are eating the amount of vegetables they're meant to be eating, how do we get that to 50% rather than anything else? So, you know, so we've got a whole day dedicated to that. And then on the weekend, that's where it's more dedicated to the practitioners. So we have 2 days dedicated to for doctors, one day to hear from doctors who have made the switch to integrated medicine and how they do it, and then another day dedicated to basically how to build a successful integrated micropractice. And we want to make this available to any health professional, but particularly doctors who are in the system right now. There are a lot of doctors out there, and I've met tons of them, and I've heard from even more of them, that would love to be doing integrated medicine and would love to be seeing people for an hour at a time, but they're stuck in their job as an anesthesiologist in a hospital or as an emergency room physician. And so part of what we're looking to do is to, you know, make it as easy as possible for doctors to quit that job and start to do functional integrated medicine in a low overhead environment, and that's what we're going to dedicate that Sunday to. And then the next week is when we'll be launching the Quasi Health Insurance program. And so if you want to find out about all of this and stay up to date, just make sure that you're registered. And if you go to you know, evolutionofmedicinesummit.com, if you go there now, you can see all of last year's summit. But next year, you can, you know, after the 1st of August, you can register for this year's summit.
Oh, that sounds terrific. This is really applying these principles systemically and systematically. It's connecting all of the dots and really making it possible for people. It also seems like, I love the idea that you're also training and recruiting the doctors we need who themselves are, you know, kind of stymied and disconnected in the current system. It's not working for them either. And if more of them were recruited, then more of us will have access to train people with quality care who are looking in the direction that you're pointing to, you know, with the 8 different areas that need to substantively change. So that just sounds fantastic. It also seems like that consumer power could, you know, help make healthier food, you know, deliver a greater consumer population for healthier food, maybe bring down those prices so that, you know, more people have access to it. You know, one of the things that's happened is, you know, there's been this whole outreach in the media where people who question the current system are called stupid or anti-scientific or ignorant, you know, people who don't want to have a choice about eating or, you know, blamed, you know, making food choices on their own for what's healthy or blamed for it. So there's been an actual kind of anti-consumer trend of media coverage and almost attack on the average person, the opposite of empowering, saying that people are dumb and they can't figure this out. But what's so great about what you're doing is really it's saying that people are smart, they can figure it out, they know what's best, it's giving them the tools. I just love to hear your comments about, you know, the public. I mean, is everyone kind of just, you know, sort of dead drunk, having eaten too many Twinkies and, you know, can't follow anything and doesn't know what they're talking about? I mean, what percentage of people do you think, well, you've sketched it out before, but, I mean, you must encounter a lot of people who are woken up or in the process of waking up and becoming empowered about health. You know, so what do you think about that portrayal of the public as kind of, you know, ignorant and not knowing what they want or need?
I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, there's probably in parts fan and parts not. Yeah, I mean, I've been to birthday parties recently with my daughter where there's a pinata and then there's cake, and you know, we have a culture of sugar enabling for a start. It's massive in America. But I think that is. But you know, the cool thing is, Allison, it's going to work in the way that it has to work out. You know, at the beginning, we're not going to get everyone, but we are going to get those people that are ready to change, and they'll come through. And then, you know, as their results, you know, speak for themselves, you know, that it'll continue to develop. But, you know, obviously, one of the biggest things is how could you make this affordable for people? And I think right. that this, you know, this new service is going to make that, because one, if you sign up for it, you're exempted from the Obamacare mandate. So you don't, you know, I don't know what everyone else's health insurance was, but living in New York with a family of three, the very, very cheapest health insurance that I could find, and that was with a ridiculously high deductible and, you know, ridiculously low number of services, was $800 a month. And so, you know, and I know some people that pay way more than that. You know, for this, we're talking, you know, $399 for that family, $399 a month. With a much lower deductible and an ability to, you know, to work with some of these functional providers and take advantage of the peer-to-peer support and all of that. So, you know, it's going to be cheaper, it's going to be better, and it's going to, you know, our goal is, you know, I think that the kind of people that will sign up for it were the kind of people that, you know, take care of their own health and don't go and see those types of providers. And I would say that if we suck enough of the really healthy people who don't incur a lot of cost out of the system, that's what's going to, you know, essentially, you know, bring down the system in a certain way, is that you need all the healthy people to pay for the sick people. I mean, if that's not obvious from Obamacare, I don't know what is. And so, you know, and so I think in order to build a new system that, you know, it makes the other system obsolete, there's going to be, you know, some people that would not benefit from it. But, you know, if we look at the medical system now, I mean, you've probably had a million guests on your healthcare on this show that have talked about the perils of the healthcare system, all of the amount of money we spend and all of the administration and all of the, like, a third of it's waste. So if it's $3 trillion, $1 trillion out of that is waste. I mean, these are the big chunks that we can take, you know, take stuff out of. And I hope that by, you know, introducing competition, which is one of the, you know, one of the founding principles of America, you know, hopefully everyone will have to buck their ideas up and actually deliver value to the consumer. And so I hope that it'll just be a massive net positive all the way around, because even those people that aren't in our system are still in the other system, we'll see that, you know, as they have to, compete for business, and they'll just have to add more value at a lower cost, and that's better for everyone.
What about the part of standard medicine that it does well, acute care in an accident, end of life care? Although I don't know how well it does that actually, but do you see a way of kind of marrying the things that people? I mean, a lot of people, like I would be an example of this, get health insurance. I mean, I have health insurance that I never use. You know, and I do all of the kinds of stuff that we're talking about. Preventatively, you know, in case XYZ would happen, so my family would not be wiped out financially. It's a kind of blackmail. I'll carry this. And I think there are people in that boat too. I mean, maybe not that many, because a lot of Americans are just wedded into all the medications and the drugs and all the rest of it. But, you know, there is this sort of, I guess I'm talking about catastrophic insurance. So in that sense, you're saying that this kind of plan is not really for the catastrophe, but that could be more.
No, it is, Allison.
It is
completely, yeah. So depending on the level you have, you either can get up to $250,000 or $1 million per qualifying event. And certainly any of those things that you're talking about is a qualifying event. If you have an accident, yeah, you're covered 100%. Otherwise, it wouldn't really be health insurance. But the key thing to know about this is that it's non-profit, right? So a certain percentage of the money that you pay for any health service is going to the profit of everyone, right? Because these are all companies that have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders and have to make profit, right? So, you know, a certain percentage profit, there's a lot less bureaucracy, you know, and it's again, it's run like a non-profit, you know, small amount. So again, you're taking those costs out of the system. There's far, far less bureaucracy. And And yeah, we'll see how it grows. But yeah, I mean, there is a part of it that is designed to cover people catastrophically. I mean, the goal is that once you have this product, you don't need anything else. You just need to use it, and then as you sign up, you actually also signed up for a couple of other services that are synergistic. So there's a technology platform where you can choose education and things that you want to find. There's also like a peer-to-peer support engine as well, so you can find groups of people who have the same issues and diseases as you do, and there's an online support group that's created for that. So, and that scales to infinity as well, and doesn't cost anything to deliver. So, these are the kind of technologies that we'd be looking for and structures that we'd be looking for to really, take this from the niche and the niche to the mainstream. And and I think that, we're hopefully about to get there. And obviously the other thing is, this health sharing membership exempts you from the Obamacare mandate as well. So if you're a member, it was actually grandfathered into Obamacare that this would be part of it. And so now that Obamacare is law, I think we're in good shape with that. And, you got to use a loophole every so often if you want to cause systemic change, right, Allison?
That's right. I mean, all the time, really. So, listeners, you can go to Evolution of Medicine Summit and begin the educational process or continue it, because actually this is, very advanced, new, cutting-edge understandings that will be offered at the summit, and it's really in continuity with what those of us who have been following this kind of thing have been interested in for a while. What is the newest, the best, the what has been evolved over, and that's why it's evolutionary, over the 30, 35 years that this system of healthcare has been practiced and, has findings and really figured out what works, such as, being able to, end diabetes, reverse diabetes in a month. I mean, that's quite astounding. And you'll also, be able to participate in this whole new way of getting healthcare that James Maskell is just talking about. So you can go to evolutionofmedicinesummit.com, and after August 1st, you'll be able to, sign up for the next summit and begin the learning process with videos and all kinds of things from the last summit, and I attended last year. It was fabulous, not to be missed, really eye-opening, and I've been at this for a long time, so very excited about this. I just want to thank you so much, James, both for your incredible work, your visionary systemic view, really, behind it, that drives all of this. It's just brilliant what you come up with. I regard you as kind of the maestro. It's putting all of these pieces together and seeing this and really evolving this. It's really incredible for me, having covered this movement and disseminated these health views for so long, to see medicine genuinely evolving like this, and it really needs to happen. So, thank you again and again and again for what you're doing. Thank you so much. And thank you for being our guest here. Yeah, thank you for being back here. Yeah, it's lovely to have you, and I'm sure our listeners enjoy it too. There's a lot more to learn and get excited about for everyone. Go to evolutionofmedicinesummit.com. And next week we'll be back with the next edition of Connect the Dots. Be well, be healthy, everyone. Thank you so much, James. And thank you, listeners, for being with us every week here on Connect the Dots, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Have a wonderful week. Mm-hmm.